everyone, and welcome to this week's The EdTech Podcast, live from Victoria Park in Hackney, London. This week, the final episode of our Back to School series features Teach Meet London Boat, which was recorded in the summer on the day the new UK Education Secretary was announced. I'm in interview with the Digital Sisters on eSafety, Primary School Deputy Head Alana Gay on the merits of investing and engaging early with science and tech, and Teacher Toolkit on mixing up the Teach Meet model and giving everyone a voice. It's a great recording, and you'll hear a mix of the Thames River water sloshing, jubilant CPD-based cheers and general nattering in the background. I'd also recommend you check out At Pivotal Podcast, who did a whole raft, no pun intended, of recordings from this session. Before we get started, a few quick messages from this week. First up, community. This week, I'm announcing three sponsors of the EdTech Podcast launch party, which is fantastic news for everyone because it means that you'll all have free drinks whilst you get to know each other. I'm also looking for your questions for the EdTech Podcast live panel. This will take place at the launch, but I'm saving questions from now on for ICT evangelist, founder of Easy Peasy Jen Lexman, and primary school teacher Tolu Oyanola. You can send these to at podcastedtech, hashtag edtechpod, or via the email at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. I've also had a tweet from an assistant head teacher looking for suggestions on inspiration for homework and tablets, including the best ways to organise and record. He's at sabato0612, and I said I'd get that out to you all this week, so do please tweet him some ideas at sabato, S-A-B-A-T-O, 0612. And finally, I'm not sure if you all noticed the most ironic hashtag to date, which was hashtag grammar schools, spelt incorrectly in response to the news that grammar schools are again on the horizon in the UK. I also attended a workshop at Nesta on new EdTech ideas, and for me, the biggest takeaway was the need to create more trusting and better dialogue between the Ed and Tech in EdTech. I hope that in some small part, this podcast helps towards that mission. So by sharing stories and showing how behind each camp there are real humans going about their business. Don't forget that you can subscribe, rate and review these episodes on Apple or Android. And if you do enjoy this, don't forget to send in your questions for the live panel, and have a great week, everyone. So I'm here on Teach Meet London Boat. It's a beautiful evening along the River Thames, and I've just journeyed back from Devon, where I got my sea legs on a fishing trip actually, and my husband did not and was violently sick over the side of the boat. However, we're faring a lot better, and I'm here with the Digital Sisters. So hello, sisters. And so just for our listeners from all over the world, can you give a little overview of what you do?
So we co-founded an organisation called Digital Awareness UK. We set up to directly address the need for a more innovative, fresh, new approach to tackling e-safety issues such as cyberbullying, online abuse, sexting, all of those wonderful things. And we have a team of people who live and breathe social media. That's our specialism. And we have a team of hackers. I'm a YouTuber. We've got social media strategists. People who we hope will inspire young people to think a bit differently about how they use social media and think more responsibly about how they're using it. So we love it. We've got quite a positive approach to it, and we're having the conversation.
And what's your background? How did you get into this field of work?
Well, we got into it because both of us have kind of been in technology and social media all of our lives. So like Charlotte said, she's a YouTuber and she has a fantastic presence online is Willow B, and I was a social media strategist before setting up the company. So and also Charlotte had worked in PR and social media communications. We'd worked for lots of cool brands like Coca-Cola and Barclays and Microsoft, and we were advising them on the sorts of things they should be doing on social media. But we both have parents who are teachers, and they were telling us a bit about what's happening on the ground in schools, and we decided to kind of find out a bit more about that area, and then saw that actually there's a bit of a crisis happening at the moment, and whilst there's fantastic work that's being done by all sorts of different organisations, we felt there was a little bit of a gap for people like us who have experience in the corporate world to bring that into the public sector and hopefully educate in a different way.
And so what would you say are the top concerns of parents and educators around social media and tech at the hands of their children or students?
I think there are a few. I would definitely say that a lot of parents and teachers in particular are feeling a bit disempowered by the fact that, you know, the social media landscape is moving at such speed. So every month, you know, it's a different app. If I was to say Kik, Yik Yak, Omegle, to a lot of people they wouldn't know what I'm talking about, but these are some of the most popular networks, you know, amongst secondary school students. So I think a lot of them are kind of feeling a little bit on the back foot because they don't necessarily feel they're as savvy as they could be. But, you know, these are all social issues that we're tackling, whether it's bullying or relationships.
And how do you feel about the idea that, you know, if you're in your early teens, that it's tradition to find a sort of space where your parents and your teachers can't go and do things that are slightly naughty?
I mean, let's be honest, we all would have loved, you know, for example, you've got Uvu, where you can have almost, you know, multiple FaceTime or Skype chats with your friends all at the same time. I can think of nothing better than to go home and to, you know, continue all of the fun you had at school with your pals at home. You know, there are social media is amazing. So, you know, we do believe that it should be encouraged and supported. It's just making them aware of the pitfalls, and we're always quite surprised that we'll go into school and talk about sexting for the first time, you know, or we'll go in and talk about banter and online abuse for the first time. It shouldn't be the case, you
and
know.
It's kind of not very nice to bring up, but are there horrible case studies that you basically allude to in terms of getting people to understand the dangers of these things?
I mean, to land every single point, we have to use a case study example, and we don't ever, you know, share any names. A lot of the cases that we're sharing are examples that we've seen popping up in the media, or really high profile cases, perhaps with celebrities and things, and we'll kind of have a bit of role play and discuss how you'd get yourself out of that situation if you were to be in it. But I mean, going back to your question earlier, we're not short of issues for parents and teachers to be concerned about. They're popping up in the news left, right and centre all the time. I think the kids are very much now aware. We've kind of gone into a new wave of awareness with the kids. They're aware of, you know, things like how bad cyberbullying can be, the dangers around sexting. It's important to be aware of your digital footprint. So there's good levels of awareness there. It's just that people are needed to kind of go in and heighten that level of awareness and actually bring them back to the drawing board with real life case studies and say, look, when you're in this sort of situation, this is what can happen and this is what happens if you don't do those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So absolutely, that's the best way that we can educate.
I mean, we even see some of these issues among supposed adults on Twitter,
yeah.
You know, thinking about the recent political landscape, but also among the educator community sometimes. I think half terms always prove a kind of hot point for, like, people wanting to vent their frustrations. And so I suppose it's kind of learning to manage the implications of that as well.
It is. And, you know, we do CPD sessions, we do parent events, and we very much tell parents and teachers that they really do have to practice what they preach. And we use examples of what not only MPs are doing and celebrities are doing, but things that we've seen parents that have done or teachers have done that are embarrassing, that have been uncovered in the media or by the school. So actually, kind of go back to what you were saying about using case studies, using those similar sorts of case studies with parents and teachers can be equally as effective, because they're thinking, oh, actually, that's something that perhaps I might do or one of my friends might have done, and then they can relate perhaps a bit better to what their children might be doing.
Yeah. And then do you have advice for teachers if they're concerned about students in their class? You know, it used to be okay, fight, and that's it's a physical, you know, it's a manifestation that you can be aware of if something like that's happening in real life. If it's online, it's slightly removed. So if a teacher's concerned that something's happening on social media and that kind of thing, what would your advice to them be?
To talk. I think kind of before you even get to that phase, one of the biggest issues the teachers are having is the fact that they're feeling a bit out of their comfort zone, in the sense that if they're finding out that, oh my God, this chat's happened on a WhatsApp group and so-and-so is blocked and so-and-so is deleted, they're kind of, you know, way out of their comfort zone. They might not know what WhatsApp is or how it works. So I think before they even get to the point where they can kind of have a chat, it's really good for them to have a bit of awareness, have a bit of a play with these sorts of apps, and get a bit of education and CPD around them. And then absolutely talking to the students is really key. Because when you think about issues like cyberbullying, you know, bullying's been around forever, whether it's happening online or whether it's happening in the playground. And lots of the students that we talk to, whether it's sexting or cyberbullying or whatever, they just want to talk to somebody. They're talking about the fact that they've been embarrassed or humiliated, and just having that ear to sound off to can sometimes be equally as helpful as giving them the really technical advice about what they need to do to get themselves out of it.
I think as well, just to add to that, when we speak to students, there are two reasons, and they tend to be very similar for teachers and parents, as to why they wouldn't necessarily involve them so much in their digital lives if they're having an issue. The first one is because they feel that they'll overreact. And the second reason is because they feel that they don't know anything anyway, so why would we go to them for help? So being, you know, to that first issue, you know, being as non-judgmental as possible and, you know, offering that listening ear and being aware that there isn't an easy solution to a lot of these online social issues. And to the second one, as Emma was saying, you know, upskill yourself, empower yourself with information. And we've got some great resources for teachers. And we've got, if you search for Live My Digital, and we've got 6 videos which teachers can learn about issues around sexting and online abuse, etc. You know, do some Googling, ask your students, you know, what are the most popular apps in the class, you know, have a conversation about it.
And what is the earliest age that you kind of give your advice to? Do you go into primary schools?
We are always, you know, I think teachers are always surprised to learn that we work with, you know, reception age children, because they are already falling for online scams, you know, clicking on suspicious links, etc., because it said they're going to win some sort of prize, and B, they're already actively using social media. I'm talking about Movie Star Planet, Disney Club Penguin, games that allow you to create a bit of an avatar and then also go onto online chat forums and speak to strangers as well. So they're already, you know, very vulnerable to the sorts of issues that you'll see affecting teenagers as well. So right the way through to, you know, 18-year-olds preparing for university. We talked to them about their digital footprint and how, you know, universities, future employees, the first thing they're going to do is Google them, and we want to make sure that they're standing out for all of the right reasons, not just to make sure that dodgy content doesn't pop up, but also the best kind of content pops up about them.
Yeah.
As well.
And so obviously we have a new education secretary announced today. Do you have any messages that you would like to impart to her?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we'd like to see a lot more engagement, just as we've seen in the coding community, where schools have been engaging all sorts of different sorts of organisations to come in and keep the teachers empowered and keep the students educated, because very much in the edtech space you're finding that it's very difficult for teachers to know everything about everything. And, you know, digital awareness is something that we do every single day, and even for us it's really hard for us to kind of be on the front foot of everything that everyone's doing and how they're using it. So we can only imagine what it's like for teachers. So I think as a message to go out to the new education secretary, make sure you're empowering your students and your teachers by getting involved with different organisations who really know their stuff.
Okay, excellent. And you were obviously at Teach Meet London Boat today. So what are you guys doing here?
We are here to be inspired, you know, and to, we like to keep our ears on the ground and find out what's motivating teachers, what, you know, what's driving teachers. So we're really excited to hear about some of the discussions, you know, thinking about all the changes in government, etc., and how that is going to impact our schools. So,
and how can people find out about what you're up to if they want to find out a little bit more?
Please visit us. Our website is digitalawarenessuk.com. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Digital Sisters. And yeah, it'd be great to talk.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So I'm back on the back of the boat. I've kind of lost track of where we are now. Oxo Tower. We're coming all the way back round. National Theatre and the London Eye. So it's been a really nice evening and lots of constructive thoughts flying around about leadership, pastoral care and much more, interspersed with just cheering people as we go under bridges. So I'm here now with Alana Gay, who, as well as being a senior leader within education, is also one of the Women Ed
London Regional
representatives. So Alana, what brings you to Teach Meet London Boat?
I think it's just a different opportunity and another experience in order to see how we can change the way that CPD is done for teachers.
Yeah.
So I quite like the idea that it's all part of the grassroots movement, part of us, one each one teach one. And it sort of builds on that idea that teachers are the best resource that we have in order to train other teachers. So let's see what we can put out there and make sure that it's all high quality. And so far, I must say, it's done really well today.
Yeah, excellent. And can you tell the listeners what your exact role in school is as well? So your background in education.
When I moved to the UK, I started in secondary education. So I specialise in science and I was a head of science for 6 years, as well as, and then moved into assistant headship, joined the Future Leaders Network, so working towards headship. Yep. And as a part of that, they just went, well, do you want to try a year in a primary? So this year, I've done my first taster year in the senior leadership of a primary school.
And how do those two experiences differ? in a sentence.
The younger people, well, you see a lot of the younger people in the older people and you realise that teenagers are pretty much toddlers that have learned to express themselves in words.
That's brilliant. That's a great sentence to sum up with. And so, obviously, this podcast very much looks at education innovation, ed tech, and so science and STEM is very much part of that, STEM or STEAM. So, what's been your perspective on the focus on STEM or the focus on STEAM in recent years, and how have you seen that play out in schools?
I think I now have a better understanding that there is far too much focus put in the later years and not enough in the younger years. So in what I like to call the years of wonder, we don't have much funding, we don't have much going into primary science, and a lot of the time is cut out because the SATs don't even focus on science as one of the exams, so therefore the teachers don't focus on it unless their school is selected. So it's very much hit or miss at primary level on what kind of quality science or what kind of quality STEM teachers shy away from the ICT program, because it all needs to be really simplified. Otherwise, they're intimidated by it and they can't pass that intimidation on to the students that they have. My reform for it would be to start to invest in the younger years. So every school should have 2 ICT suites. Every school should have access to tablets and iPads.
Yeah.
Every school should have access to a science lab. Partner with your secondary schools. They need to put that investment in a lot younger if they want to keep that enthusiasm going into the secondary years and into the tertiary years.
Yeah, I overheard someone speaking earlier actually, sort of saying, innovation's great and there's a big appetite for it, but the funding is an issue and they only had, they could afford 1 iPad.
Yeah.
Not that it comes down to just iPads, but there's a limit to what you can do perhaps if there's 1 shared among a class and that kind of thing. So,
and there's a very big limit at primary level, and again, primary teachers do have a lot of curriculum to learn, so it becomes another thing to learn, and those that have the enthusiasm and enjoy it as a hobby, those are the ones that'll take it forward. But if your school doesn't have someone that's enthusiastic about it, it'll start off as a program, or it will become a very static program that they know everyone will access and buy into, so there's not as much differentiation, not as much creativity, and not as much going in. So the investment needs to be made.
And then from your perspective as a sort of leader within the school, how else do you use tech or, and I don't mean just hardware, so sort of an innovative approach, I suppose, to achieving some of your objectives? How does that play out as well?
I think as leaders, we use tech. Tech is there, in our perspective, to simplify things for us.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier for everyone to access. So simple things like having records. And the way that you record materials, you're either going to record it on a platform where it's accessible to others, or you're going to record it in writing. Which one is going to be the one that's going to have the longevity? You need to think about the investment that you're making, because not every fad suits your school, yep. and not every fad is going to be accessible by all of your teachers as well, or all of your senior leaders. So when you're doing your financial planning, do you really want to use a project format where people can't add in what their achievement has been, how much has been spent, or yeah. are you just going to use one that just crunches the numbers? So there's a lot of decision making to be made there. In terms of making your school tech-based, you have to think more futuristic, and I'm not quite convinced that all of us SLT, I'd happily admit that I'm not quite there in being able to predict what the future of tech is going to be. I haven't done enough research. I haven't made the time to do enough research into it. It'd be great to have a good analysis, but then how do you know the analysis from the marketing?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of negotiating all the landmines out there, I suppose, in yeah. terms of who are the cowboys and who are actually adding value and efficacy and all of the rest of it.
So. Because the beauty of tech is a lot of it looks attractive.
Yeah.
But as much as it looks attractive on the inside, it's not really that useful for your situation.
Yeah.
And once you've invested a lot of money into it, it's sort of you have to keep plowing into it to make it work because you've invested into
yeah.
it.
To save face and that kind of thing.
To save face. Yeah. And for a lot of schools, that is a scary prospect. So if I've invested in making my school one of those Google schools, as they say, then I need to make sure that it works for the students and the students are using it.
Yeah.
And one of the worst things that can happen is when you make a big investment into a certain format or a certain tech program and then the students don't buy in.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's not fit for purpose for the staff that you have.
And do you have any shout outs you'd like to make for particular innovative educators which makes sense? So what I like about what you're saying is it's very pragmatic. You haven't chased the sort of whatever's being hyped at the moment, and I like that. So
who would I shout out? I suppose most of the ideas, the one that keeps me up to date is on Twitter, ICT Evangelist.
Okay, yeah.
So a lot of what he posts I will read through and go through, and the same with Literacy Shred. I would read through a lot of what Literacy Shred put forward, and then after that, I suppose within the Women Ed Network, Miss Bookie Youssef has been yep. doing a lot of work, and it would be I operate mostly by word of mouth as opposed to listening to the big companies and what they're telling me, because
yeah.
I'd like to see it practically done from people I trust.
And how do you keep energized as an educator out there? Any other tips for people?
To keep energized, you just need to find your why, find your happiness and find your joy, and make the time and don't feel guilty about it.
That's brilliant.
So ever so often, come on a riverboat on the Thames, you're mixing and learning alongside a bit of podcasting, alongside a bit of sightseeing.
Wicked. Thank you very much, Alana.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so I'm back on the back of the boat. What's the boat called, Ross?
The London Bell.
The London Bell. And I'm here with Teacher Toolkit. So I just thought, go amiss to not find out the little backstory about putting on this event. So for everyone listening out there, how did this come about?
Well, I've been doing organising teacher meets for a good few years now, and I went to my first one in 2011, so I'm still very young to teacher meets myself, but my background in leading school leadership, kind of CPD professional development events, it just was a natural thing to do. To bring people together using my CPD experience in school but also out of school, bringing people together. And throughout the whole process, I've learned what works, what doesn't work, and there's no perfect solution. But the why we're here today, Teach Meet London, which happened in March in my current school, Quinton Kynaston in North Westminster, what about 500 people come together, which was incredible. And at the end of the evening, we announced we'd already pre-planned that we were going to do this and bring it back to its humble roots. About 2 years ago, we did one on a bus, London bus, about 40 teachers. So we've got 106 people here this evening. We're on a boat bobbing along the River Thames by Canary Wharf on our way back to Westminster. And we've just had our first two sessions. We're having a break for about 10 more minutes and we'll be back together. So we've got six hosts with six key topics, school leadership, research, etc.
Yep.
We've announced that to everyone on the boat, and people are choosing their little sessions. People break into groups, the host poses a question, and anyone can talk. And it's nice because your Teach Meet models, you have a lot of people presenting. There's a danger that the same brave people keep being on the same stages. And that's fine, and Teach Meets are great compared to your boring, typical inset you have at school. But this is just a different model.
And so this is slightly inspired by Ed Camp and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. And I know you, McIntosh, who originally created all the Teach Meet Frenzy up in Scotland, I've spoken to him about it, and he says this model is what we want to try and avoid. And it was very interesting. We had a little good chat about it. But I'm just exploring ideas of bringing people together and let everyone have a chance to speak.
Yeah.
And the Teach Meet model is great. The micro and nano presentations, the 2 and 5 minutes. But I'm seeing more and more that the same, well, in my networks and in the events I create, and I rely on a lot of the guys here tonight who are my hosts, that we organise the event, but you tend to get the same people presenting. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, not everyone's brave enough to speak in front of 2 or 3 or 500 people even. But this model is nice because there's no big wig at the centre. Someone just facilitating, everyone can have a say because everyone's got a view on something. And everyone does their own thing.
What's next after a boat?
We are thinking about a tube on the underground. I know we're based in London. A lot of people listening or following might not be near London, might feel a bit irritated or jealous. I understand that, but at least if the idea is out there, people can start to organise their own versions of it in their own cities and towns.
I've spoken to someone from Birmingham and someone from Lincoln here this evening who are going back on the train
later.
So.
And I do know some people do have done things on boats already. Whether they're moving, I don't know. But it's just any quirky idea that gets people together, and then the actual format on the night is yours to design yourself, you know, yours for the taking.
Yeah, and obviously today we had the announcement on the new education secretary. Do you have any messages for Justine Greening?
Well, I don't know much about her. I guess not many people would. But, you know, I've already started reading a couple of newspaper articles and what I do know about her. But, she has an accountant background from what I know. She's you know, obviously her school background's been much for discussion. It is day one of her leadership.
Yeah, we didn't get her on the boat in the end, that's a shame.
You know, so it's early days, but I will put a blog out in terms of my five hopes, but it'll mirror what everyone else thinks. We just want a bit of stability, listen to teachers on the front line, you know, give us a chance to breathe, put things in place. That's what all of us want.
And what have you found have been the most popular sessions here out of all?
Well, I don't know. I've been leading my own sessions, you know, and looking around the boat when I've had a chance to break. Yeah. We can't get off until the boat stops, so we're stuck.
Everyone's being very well behaved, though.
Yeah.
Very sophisticated.
Yeah, there's a few drinks to keep people entertained.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful evening.
Yeah, well, makes fantastic. I know you have to go back now and get on with things.
So it's Ross Teacher Toolkit.
Yeah, we'll send out the Twitter link.
And we can all take part in the debate.
Excellent, thank you, Ross. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed listening to this week's episode, don't forget you can subscribe via Apple or Android and share with a friend. And next up on the podcast, we've got some insights from Finland, Australia and China. Take care. Bye-bye.